everybody. My name is Ben Putley. I am CEO and co-founder of Alchemy. This is Lab Talks, and today I'm joined by Simon Taylor. Simon, please could you introduce yourself to everyone?
Hello, my name's Simon Taylor. I'm managing partner at UM.
Mm-hmm. So what does that mean? We quite often have people that aren't as familiar with the ad world as we are. So what does a managing partner at UM do?
It means I'm old. I've been in the industry...
Experienced.
Probably two decades, mm-hmm. which is actually a scary amount of time. Mm-hmm. And it means that I've got to a relatively senior position where I'm managing some big accounts.
Nice.
So I look after American Express,
yep.
And Just Eat globally, Fidelity, a number of clients under my portfolio.
I wanted to ask you, with the growing impact of AI and how it manages data, like, what do you think a human still has to add as far as insights are in a data-driven world?
Good question.
Thank you.
It's almost like we teed that one
up. No, I don't know what you mean.
I think human ingenuity is always going to be paramount. I think data without insight is just noise. And there's only so much that an algorithm can do to apply context and business theory to a set of numbers. Otherwise, it's just a mass of zeros and ones.
Yeah.
And it does genuinely take humans to engineer that. At UM, we've got a philosophy called full color media,
right?
Which is not anti-algorithm. It's utilizing AI to its best purposes, which are... essentially processing.
Yeah.
I think it's the processing power and the capability it has to streamline a lot of processes. But I don't think there's any, I think the more you rely, and especially in the creative field, the more you rely on algorithms and artificial intelligence, machine learning to do your thinking for you, the more that you revert to the mean, the more that the algorithm optimizes to what is potentially going to be a very generic output. So I think our chief strategy officer has written a piece about fighting back against bland brands. It's a really important thing that within the world of creativity, but also in the world of media, we don't just rely on computers. It's about the synthesis and interpretation of the data.
Yeah.
Otherwise, it's just pointless.
Luxury brands logos, you know, I don't know if you've seen, but a lot of them are now just like very basic text. They all look very similar. And that, I mean, isn't great, to be honest with you, because then how do you get any certain or particular affinity with a brand? How does that stand out from other brands? Because brands are emotional things, really, at the end of the day. Like, there's not too much difference between certain types of t-shirts and the luxury brand example. It's like, how does that particular brand make you feel emotionally? What do you tie that to? And how does that then dictate your marketing strategy?
I mean, creatively, I think there's a lot of benefits to AI in terms of transcreation of assets, production of multiple assets, reactivity of copy.
Yeah.
But I think without decent creative thinking, you're going to have a homogenized output that feels very generic. Even the semiotics of headline, image, you can optimize to the nth degree in terms of how it works. But if the actual headline and the image aren't arresting or playing into a consumer insight, then the output is just going to be bland, dull, and it's not going to drive any business metrics. So I think what's really important is not to forget nuance and context. And I don't think an algorithm can do that like a human can. And I think it's the power of ideas, transformative ideas that have the ability to create disproportionate effects, both in terms of the media effect, so media creative ideas, but also just straight up creative ideas.
Yeah.
You can't let a computer do that for you. You need the coming together of great minds, uninhibited by any biases, which, again, they're kind of built into algorithms, which is quite scary, actually, how the self-learning nature of algorithms can bias to certain unhelpful tropes. So that's worrying.
Yeah, because it's fundamentally, it's learning from a large language model, right? Which is great, but also does have its limitations, I think, to some degree. I think, as you rightly say, there's some things it can do very well. Like we use it a lot for frequently asked questions. So like troubleshooting issues people may have with the exchange, you know, like they're quite often the same question over and over again. And this is actually something I think Mark Benioff was talking about at a recent Salesforce event that was, I think Salesforce's AI agents can now kind of handle 80% of queries that their customers have, which is great in terms of productivity. It just makes their workforce more efficient with like smaller questions being answered more effectively. And the person on the other side asking that question gets their answer really quickly. It doesn't have to be voice, for example. It can be easily written over text. You can refer back to the text. You don't have to make notes about it. You just get your problem solved super quick, which then means you can continue to use their products.
But it's efficient, but yeah. What's the future going to look like with everything's automated if there's no humans to do to the job? That's a bit of a fear, but because you still need to value human intelligence and output. And the worry is that every loads of jobs in certainly service industries are going to be swallowed up. But not that I'm totally fearful of it. I think there are opportunities to sort of strip out the mundane and hopefully elevate stuff. But there's a great quote, which I'm going to butcher, about I want AI to do my mundane tasks so I can spend more time on my creativity.
Yeah.
And I don't want AI to do my creativity so I've got more time to do my mundane tasks.
This isn't the first time in history where there's been like technology that's significantly improved. Yeah, it's like you had typewritists, then you had email, you know, like those jobs, there's more jobs now than there ever has been because of technology that has facilitated that. And it's like typewritists became people that could write emails, you know, and then the internet meant that journalists weren't writing in newspapers. They were actually writing, there's needed more people to write more content because the internet is 24/7, you know? Yeah. So I wonder if it becomes like the shoulders upon which people can stand to then do, as you say, do more creative tasks, do things that does require human ingenuity. And the stuff that where human error can be quite impactful for tasks that are the same over and over and over again, like that kind of goes away somewhat. Yeah. And you can then do, as you say, more things. So
I think we're still recalibrating the world that we live in.
Certainly. Yeah.
Like the Lutheran printing press kind of liberated, it kind of was a seismic, bringing me back to my early modern history when I did at uni, that kind of signaled a shift in terms of the democratization of information.
Exactly.
Everyone
that,
could actually have access to print, instead of monks writing out longhand. You had information being democratized, printing presses meant it could get out there. The internet was a democratization of data, essentially. I guess AI is taking it to the extreme where it's doing its thinking for us, and that could have liberating effects, but it also has some negative connotations.
Yeah, and I think where it is very easy to create content effectively, quickly with AI, the veracity of that content becomes very important. Like knowing what is and isn't AI is going to be increasingly more difficult to see.
Kids going to write essays.
Yeah, exactly. Well, they probably won't need to, you know, like it's annoying. I would love that. But I think that's where, and now this will be my shameless blockchain plug, given that we love it at Alchemy. Blockchains have a really important role to play in that.
In terms of the transparency, democratization of data, blockchain could have a really transformative effect in terms of that transparency and visibility.
Yeah, and proving something is from the source that it says it is. You know, there's an interesting company I've come across recently called Story Protocol, which is an IP blockchain. So there is an issue with people taking IP when they shouldn't use it, but it's very difficult to prove that it's been used or where it's been used or how it's been used, particularly if you're not an enormous brand with an army of lawyers that can go out and kind of say, stop using our Pikachu, because we're Pokemon, pardon me.
So it becomes an authentication.
Exactly. Tool. Yeah. And also a way for people that are creating smaller pieces of content to actually monetize it in a way that's like, hey, you can use it from this IP blockchain. And every time you use it, you pay to use it. And the creator then gets paid at the point at which it's used. And that is, a really cool application for a blockchain in an IP space. And I think the way that I certainly think about it at Alchemy is that you could do the same thing for ads. So determining that an ad is from the brand it says it's from, and there's a record on chain that you can see where it happened, but also prove that it happened and was owned by the right person when it was being distributed.
I'm all for that. I think the more transparency in digital, the better, because I think there's been a lot of advertiser mistrust, as some of it rightly placed, in the fact that the supply chain is not as transparent as it should be. Mm-hmm. People are taking margins along the way. So whatever we can do and to authenticate and validate that advertisers' money is being spent where we want it to be spent and where we're asking it to be spent, and that it's not being whittled down on the way, all for that.
Yeah, because it seems like that should just be table stakes. You know, it's just that the system has some improvements that can be made to make sure that is the case, you know. One thing I do want to go back to, because it sounds really interesting, and I might say it's the full color media is what you guys do and specialize in UM.
Yes. What full color media is an articulation of how we need to be, look beyond the algorithm,
okay,
look at nuance, really understand brands, that they're unique, that there isn't a traditional sales funnel that just goes from awareness to consideration to conversion to loyalty, that there's many interception points along the way, and that the brand's patterns, that we call them, for each advertiser is unique, and the ways in are unique, and we shouldn't be just defaulting to received wisdom
in terms of,
there's a lot of, you know, binary thinking out there. A lot of advertising theory makes sense, but I don't think we should take everything at face value. I think we should always be challenging. So part of it is to not look at things in monotone. So look at things in a binary black and white way. The full color is to explore nuance, treat every brand differently, think about things in full color.
And now I think that that's clearly a learned skill. You know, people need to have experience in understanding the data they're seeing and then inferring wisdom from it.
Yeah.
So
how do we do it?
Yeah. How do you do it? Where does that come from?
Well, I think it comes from various sources. I think, part of it is leadership. So our new CEO, Kara Osborne, has come from a data and tech background.
Okay,
so
nice.
In terms of making sure that data and objective truth sort of the heart of what we're doing, it comes from the top.
Mm-hmm.
It also comes from the discipline of planning. So we have great strategic teams, great planning teams that will look at it, interrogate a brief, look at it through the lens of the audience, make sure that the consumer insight that drives our thinking is authentic, but also we'll use data in a way in looking at our tools, validating the audience, looking at where they are, what they're into, how best we can intercept them with media. But also econometrics is massive. So advertising is not an expense, it's an investment for the brand. And the science of econometrics is a great way of validating the value that advertising has in terms of driving sales and increasing the elasticity or the pricing, the premium of a brand. So econometrics is massively important. We have what we call full funnel modeling, which is, again, it's more nuanced than straight MMM, because it looks at, it's nested econometric models. So we look at every layer of the funnel and look at the contributing effects. So it's not just the direct impact on whatever the metric is at the bottom of the funnel that we look at, it's the halo effects and the impact that they have on each other, because they're all correlated. So again, part of full color media is understanding the complexity of a brand and the purchase journey and helping navigate your way through it.
Some people just don't believe that advertising works, and then they lose their cat and they put a sign up on a lamppost, and lo and behold, the cat turns up because someone found it, and they're like, oh, actually that, and that is advertising, right? Like,
you know what I love seeing the correlation between our spend going out and then business results upticking.
So
I'll take a client of mine, AirTasker. So it's an app that basically connects taskers, people willing to do odd jobs of any description, with people willing to do those jobs. So yeah, the long tail of service people who want to do jobs, whether that be clearing rubbish, whether that be fixing a sink, putting shelves up.
Okay.
We've seen, so we've run campaigns for them in several cities, but in London, the client just showed me the dashboard that showed the number of tasks exactly correlating with when we've gone on air. So we're advertising and just seeing huge spikes. So we have to remind ourselves, just things like that make our job worth doing. So actually seeing the effects, seeing the fact that their business is thriving. Same with Amex. When we see, I think you need to get out of the game. If you aren't motivated by seeing your clients do well and the business results flow from what you're doing, it's time to jump ship and do something else.
I think you're probably right.
It's good to remind ourselves. When you see your own work out in field, it's great.
Yeah.
It still feels good. And I feel even better when I've driven business results.
Yeah, the numbers back it up. You're like, we think this is a good campaign.
Work.
Yeah, 100%. I agree with you. It's a stupid
example. Otherwise, we're all in the wrong job.
Yeah, exactly. And it's like all types of advertising work. And I always give this stupid example, but like, I can tell you what the number one rated 100-inch TV is because TCL, which is the brand that created it, advertise on the billboards at Arsenal where I sit and watch them week in, week out.
It might not be immediate as well. So that often ads can have a subliminal effect.
Totally
agree. Don't realize that everyone doesn't think advertising affects them, which is, again, part of the perception that higher up in the C-suite, people don't see the value of marketing. This the less sophisticated ones see it as a cost and not an investment. But it does. It might not necessarily pay back in the immediate term. And so the whole Bennett and Field long and shorts bit validates that over time, it pays to build a brand.
Totally agree.
And it gives you more pricing power. It's going to give you more earned media value. Mm. It's going to create more talkability. And it's going to fortify your brand to make sure that actually the performance layers of your media plan are going to work much harder if you've got a really powerful brand message at the top of the house. The craft of planning brought me into this. Initially, when I started my career, I wanted to get into TV production or journalism. And I worked at Ministry Magazine, and I worked at T4, at Channel 4, and Margarita Taylor, showing my age, when Dermot O'Leary and Margarita Taylor were still presenting.
Yeah.
But actually, the challenge of working at an agency and working across multiple brands has kept me engaged all these years because it actually is quite a cerebral, not pastime, challenge. There is a challenge in understanding what clients want and need from us as agency partners, and then putting a plan from a brief into action. And so I've won quite a lot of awards in my time.
Nice.
Not beating my chest about that, but it generally, what matters most is the recognition and trust of my clients that we're doing the right things and we're driving the business results, because that's what makes me happy.
Yeah, because you do often hear, it's like, well, it's the creative that matters the most. And it's certainly a good creative will help any campaign. But if no one sees it, or the right people don't see it.
A tree falls in a forest and no one's there.
Bingo. Did it even fall? You know?
So like, did it make a sound?
Yeah.
Can't remember the cliche now.
Yeah, it's a cliche for a reason, right?
Well, that's what data, again, can help to make sure that the media placements that we put out there are contextually targeted. They're to the right audience, that they're viewable, that there's a higher attention. Mm. So attention is also something it's a bubbling topic. It's been bubbling for a while, and we're applying that data to our plan. So on Just Eat, we've normalized our CPMs.
Okay.
We've basically by channel, we've worked with Lumen and previously Amplified Intelligence to really interrogate the cost that we're paying by the amount of attention that each ad is getting.
Mm.
So we've essentially, it's called CPM IQ, so it's impacts quality.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, I always get this wrong. It's either IQ CPM or CPM IQ. Either way, it's about making sure that we're recalibrating plans towards channels that drive the most attention. And that's driving more efficiency, and it's also driving better business results.
Cookies are disappearing somewhat. It's been delayed again. do you think the attention metric is there because there are fewer and fewer identifiers that historically you would have relied on for behavioral based targeting of campaigns?
To some extent, yes.
Okay.
I think we've been drifting towards a cookieless world for a long time. However much Google try to kick it into the long grass to save their money. But there'll be identity solutions that will mean that we can still target with accuracy.
Yeah.
I think attention just adds another layer of intelligence to our planning, which we'd be kind of foolish to ignore. So I think as planners, we've got to look at, synthesize all the information available to us, all the audience insights available to us, all the data available to us, and interpret that, again, with a human brain as opposed to an algorithm, to come up with the right solution for each client.
Yeah, I think that is something quite interesting, because it's like, let me take a few steps back. Like, I've always thought the cookie is like, it's a really funny thing to deal with, you know, because you could have an ad on any website, right? And one brand might see that cookie and think, we think this is worth $5 for a bid. And then another brand might think, well, we only think it's worth one. And that is almost random to a degree. And if you're looking at what really in programmatic marketing should be and is quite a commoditized way of looking at it. You know, it's like
it's an auction.
It's an auction and you're buying similar, so like it's a 300 by 250 or it's a 728 by 90 or it's a video unit, like they're standardized, commoditized ad units that has this weird coefficient of a cookie, which is like, well, actually that MPU is worth $10 and that MPU is worth $3. And I think that makes a publisher's life quite challenging. And I think that with what you're talking about in terms of attention and how that can impact the results of a campaign, that's really innovation happening kind of outside of the actual auction. And the auction is really just buying and selling as it should do. And it allows businesses like UM and actually publishers that are like, we know we have a great audience. We write this type of content. It's a page about sport and we have the best sport writers. So we get like a really well-informed sports audience that could be good for challenger brand, or that could be for Nike or Adidas, whoever, you know. And I think you're allowing the pipes to be more like pipes, and it allows, as you kind of said at the top of the episode, human ingenuity coupled with more commoditized data without this weird cookie coefficient is actually quite a nice way to go, because it allows humans to gain wisdom from the data and then make recommendations, put together really comprehensive plans to deliver results like you talked about there, Tasker.
Well, collaboration is key for any good output, because more brains are better than one.
They are, yeah.
And if you can operate, I think this is really important, if you can operate without ego, I think you get better results, because
certainly
great ideas can come from anywhere. I hate this not invented here approach to ideas, which gives some, and not just creative agencies, but that they are famous for it. If it's not invented here, we're not going to go with this idea. If you democratize ideas and in the right forum, so at UM we have an initiative called Fearless Ideas Forums, where we get agencies, so us, the media agency, the creative agency, any other social, if there's standalone digital agencies, we get those involved.
Yeah.
And importantly, the clients, and distill a really good brief, distill it into a key question, have an open forum, a discussion where we try to basically ideate around that distilled insight and come up with great ideas, and then hone those ideas down and then make them happen. I guess the best example of one that's come to life is we've got a new Amex Gold campaign coming up, and we've got loads of music festivals that we've kind of had our logo attached to. Is there a way we can make, instead of paying a royalty fee to an artist, an established artist, why don't we do something authentic for music fans, for people who love live music, and give unsigned artists the opportunity to submit their work and have a chance to not only feature in this TV ad,
that's awesome,
but also get the royalty for that and feature in one of the Amex sponsored music festivals. So Unsigned was born from a Fearless Ideas Forum with the clients.
Nice.
They co-authored that. It's now in its second year. We extended it to actually help a venue because obviously COVID has decimated the live music scene, and venues are the crucible of live music. Without those new acts, you don't have the next Ed Sheeran or the, I don't know why I mentioned him, or the...
Well, he used to just show up in pubs, didn't he? So kind of, everyone, he was unsigned at some point.
Actually, it reminds me of the Oasis. So now they've reformed. More than half of the original venues that they started out at on their opening tour have disappeared.
Really?
So we helped sponsor, we completely renovated the dome in Tufnell Park.
Oh, yeah.
And that was helped bring it back to life. We had sessions with up-and-coming musicians to mentor them. So we had a load of in music industry experts. We've created a documentary on Amazon Prime. And Amex have seen great business results in the back of that. So we've got shortlisted for Cannes. We got awarded at the Festival of Media.
Mm-hmm.
Long-winded way of saying, great ideas come from collaborating without ego, but bringing the clients along for the journey, not doing a ta-da, working with them, iterating to come up with the best output.
Yeah. What do you think the future of planning looks like for Amex, should we say, in 5 years' time?
I think there'll still be, I think AI will still be part of the process, but I think it won't be the key determinant of the output of a plan. I think it will always rest on planners' ingenuity, intelligence, interpretation of the data.
Yeah.
I think the complexity of planning will only increase.
Okay,
it's only ever increased since I started the game.
Yeah, fair enough.
Which is why I've maintained my interest in advertising so long, because we live in a landscape that's continually evolving. Mm-hmm. We need to make sure that we're creating client-based solutions that are reactive enough to that changing landscape. So to summarize, I think planning will still be reliant on the intelligence of human beings and the creativity of great minds. And I think we'll use technology and data to help navigate things as best we can as things get increasingly more complex. But I think I'm optimistic because we've already got a great arsenal of data and tools at hand to be able to help plan with precision. So we've got econometrics. Well, at UM we have full funnel modeling. We have attention planning.
Mm-hmm.
We have a new suite of tools that we've just rolled out as part of Full Colour Media.
Nice.
So an audience console, a planning console, and reporting console, which is all interconnected. We have utilize Asana and task management. So that all becomes a bit more streamlined.
Mm.
How do I feel about planning in the next 5 years? Optimistic.
If you enjoyed that episode, there's many more on our YouTube channel, on our Spotify and Apple podcasts. To make sure you don't miss the next episode, make sure you have your notifications turned on so you can hear the next great conversation we have with our next guest.